Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Now, as parents all over the country resume school routines and welcome back the structure it provides, others are facing the daily struggle of getting their children to eat a healthy breakfast, finish a lunchbox, or join the dinner table. But how can you manage a fussy eater? Well, I am joined on the line by Stephanie Fleming. Stephanie, you're very welcome.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for coming on, because I know there'll be lots of parents that will really identify with the story you're sharing, and it could be hard sometimes to put your hand up and say, you know, I'm not coping with this, or I'm struggling with this. Your daughter is a fussy eater.
Yeah, so my little girl is 4 and she has an eating disorder that's called ARFID. So Indy doesn't really eat. So even you're saying like a healthy breakfast, finish a lunchbox, if I could get Indy to eat a chocolate bar before school, I would be the happiest person in the world. So Indy is basically not clinically really, really sick, or isn't in hospital 24/7, because she's kept going by supplements. So she takes what would be like the equivalent of an older person's Ensure. She takes 2 kids' versions of those that would give her 697 calories a day. And we have to try and get up to 300 calories of food into her after that, which sounds really, really easy. But it's the most stressful, horrific experience ever.
And how did this come about, Stephanie? Did she take bottles or feed as a baby? And then when you moved on to solids, was that when things got tricky?
It was kind of tricky from the start. So she never really fed properly or typically. I think the first 2 weeks was probably the only time we had, like, inverted commas, normal feeding. And then she went on what we call a food strike. So she stopped taking bottles 14 weeks. And we were recommended then to try solids. But that didn't really help. So she'd take maybe 3 or 4 spoonfuls of anything, and then that would be it. She hated lumps, didn't appreciate different textures. Like she just didn't eat. Now, along with Indy's ARFID, she is autistic, which explains a lot of things, but then creates more problems, because people blame her eating on the fact that she's autistic. So we're kind of in a loop that you can't get out of.
And how do you manage mealtimes, Stephanie? How do you still sit down as a family? How do you work around this?
So we try. So every instinct you have, you have to forget. So if you can get Indy to eat in the bathroom, you're doing well. If you can get her to eat in the kitchen, brilliant. We try and have family meals. So it's taken us probably a year and a bit to get her to sit at the table with us and not to have a meltdown or be completely overwhelmed. So there's like 32 different steps of eating. So people think you sit at the kitchen table, you pick a knife and a fork up, you put the food to your mouth and you swallow it. But there's actually so many other stages involved in it. So if we can get Indy to sit in a room and not be completely overwhelmed, we actually have a bit of a win, which sounds crazy. So like we do sit her at the kitchen table, but 90% of the time she won't engage with food. It's like her head and her stomach just doesn't click, and she doesn't understand like I have to eat or I should be eating. So like a typical family would have had 10,000 ice creams over the summer. Indy's never had an ice cream. We get to Easter, we don't do Easter eggs because she wouldn't touch an Easter egg. We don't do a selection box, a birthday cake. If she has a really good day and she does something really well, or we're excited for something, we don't go to the shop and buy something nice. Like you miss out on so many milestones, as well as like the norm of you sit down, you have 3 meals a day. So anything food related, it's so stressful. But it's taken a lot of work to try and take the pressure off and say, oh, we have a try or have a lick, or why don't you try this? Because that's actually creating more of a problem then, because you're stressing her out while you're stressed.
Well, Stephanie, sounds like you're doing an incredible job for your little girl. And I'm sure it can be so, so tough at times. I want to bring in Teresa Foley, see if we can get a bit of support and advice for you. She's a pediatric occupational therapist and feeding therapist. Teresa, you're very welcome.
Hi, Claire. Thanks so much for having me.
Even listening to Stephanie's story there about Indy, I'm sure there's an absolute spectrum of fussy eating, from, you know, the very full on, and to the won't eat certain foods. It can happen in all different ways and manifest in all different ways for children, I'd imagine.
Exactly. I think the word spectrum is a really good way of describing it. So lots of our children, including one of my own, will go through a phase of what people call fussy eating or picky eating when they're a toddler. Often around the age of 2 or 3, they can start to refuse foods that they previously did eat, and they start to reject food and go through a phase of, you know, maybe eating things like chicken nuggets or waffles or wedges or food that's quite safe and preferred to them. Most children will, after a year or two, move on from that stage and move past that. However, for some children, these difficulties can persist and actually become more severe and serious as they get older. And I suppose that's when we move past the term picky eating to what we describe as problem eating. And within that, then, within problem eating, then that encompasses things like very severe picky eating, and maybe children with autism or developmental delay who have selective type eating. And also it encompasses complex feeding disorders, as Stephanie has outlined, such as ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, or things like pediatric feeding disorder, which is another condition that I see.
And Stephanie was talking there and she was giving really good advice inadvertently. The less fuss and pressure we put on these situations, I assume the better, is it? And it must be a fine line between formally supporting the issue and not creating too much stress around it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, lots of us would have grown up with messages at home like, you don't leave the table until your plate is cleared, or just have one more bite, or, you know, there's children starving and you're not eating your dinner. And it can be a real struggle for us as parents to try and abandon these messages that we grew up with. But actually creating an environment where the child feels relaxed, secure, there's no pressure on them to eat, that's actually the most positive eating environment that we can create. And in my clinic and in my work with families, that's what I aspire to all the time. So one of the key things that I work on with families is actually, believe it or not, taking the attention away from the food being eaten to encouraging the child to maybe sit with the family if they can, and even just enjoy being together at the table. And if the child doesn't eat, that's fine. They can always try again next time. Or they might even do something like take part in preparing the meal or setting the table or even bringing the groceries in from the car. And it's trying to see how we can involve the child in a way that's positive and meaningful and connecting with the family for them.
Yeah. So I hope Stephanie's still listening, because I told her she is doing an incredible job. And she did also say you have to kind of forget certain instincts. And I was really surprised when I became a mum, that overriding instinct to feed your kids and for them to have a full belly is it just kind of takes over. And I want to read you one of the texts, because I'm sure a lot of people, it will resonate with a lot of people. They say, our 18-year-old son, which you could probably put any age in here, eats no fruit or veg. He lives mostly on bread, butter and cheese, but he does eat meat, fish and chicken. I hide veg and sauces like curries, but his limited palate is very restrictive, and it worries us now that he's getting ready to leave home. He will not even try new foods. When we eat out, he'll only go for pizza, burger, goujons and chips. Any suggestions how we get him to try new foods? I mean, at 18, she's up against it, and his palate may well turn around, you know, over the next few years and decades. But do we need to really worry about the nutritional content of what our kids are eating? I know that sounds like a ridiculous thing to say. Of course, nutrition is important, but without adding all that stress around food that we mentioned.
I guess in my line of work, and maybe this is not what the listener wants to hear, but I feel all food is good food. So regardless of, you know, some of the things she described there, like goujons, pizza, there is a nutritional value in all food. And I know, again, as a mother myself, we all want our children to eat the most nutritious food available. But at times that maybe is just not where your child is at. And as you said, that can apply to a toddler up to an 18-year-old. So one thing I will say is that if we can tap into something that's motivating or enjoyable for the child or the teenager, we're probably more likely to achieve success with them in helping them to expand their food preferences. So, for example, if a teenager wants to go to McDonald's with their friends, they're probably going to be more motivated to try nuggets or a burger there, as opposed to you telling them, right, you need to come and eat this with the family.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fine line to tread, but I think it really does take the pressure off that if we have less stress, you know, around food and positive eating experiences, then we really are doing our kids the best service that we can. Well, thank you so, so much for coming on to Teresa Foley, paediatric occupational therapist and feeding therapist, and mum Stephanie Fleming. We wish you and Indy all the best. And perhaps we can hook the two of you up for a little further support after the show, if that's possible.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.